You have read history books, Miss Granger?
Hermione nodded.
Well, said Dumbledore, that is what heroes have to do, Miss Granger. They have their tasks, and they must grow strong to accomplish them. And that is what you see happening to Harry. If there is anything that can be done to gentle his pathway, then you will be the one to do it, and not I. For I am not Harry's friend, alas, but only his mysterious old wizard.
I, said Hermione, I'm not sure I still want to be.
Her voice stopped. It seemed too awful to say aloud. Dumbledore closed his eyes, and when he opened them, he looked a little older than before.
No one can stop you, Miss Granger, if you choose to stop being Harry's friend. As for what it would do to him, you may know that better than I.
That doesn't seem fair,
Hermione said, her voice trembling.
That I've got to be Harry's friend because he's got no one else. That doesn't seem fair.
Being a friend is not something you can be forced to, Miss Granger.
The blue eyes seemed to look right through her.
The feelings are there, or they are not. If they are there, you can accept them or deny them. You are Harry's friend, and choosing to deny it would wound him terribly, perhaps beyond healing. But, Miss Granger, what would drive you to such extremes?
She couldn't find words. She'd never been able to find words.
If you get too near Harry, you get swallowed up, and no one sees you anymore. You're just something of his. Everyone thinks the whole world revolves around him, and...
She didn't have the words. The old wizard nodded slowly.
It is indeed an unjust world we live in, Miss Granger. All the world knows that it is I who defeated Grindelwald, and fewer remember Elizabeth Beckett, who died opening the way so I could pass through. And yet, she is remembered. Harry Potter is the hero of this play, Miss Granger. The world does revolve around him. He is destined for great things, and I ween that in time the name of Albus Dumbledore will be remembered as Harry Potter's mysterious old wizard, more than for anything else I have done. And perhaps the name of Hermione Granger will be remembered as his companion, if you prove worthy of it in your day. For this I tell you true, never will you find more glory on your own than in Harry Potter's company.
Hermione shook her head rapidly.
But that's not...
She'd known she wouldn't be able to explain.
It's not about glory. It's about being something that belongs to someone else.
So, you think you would rather be the hero?
The old wizard sighed.
Oh, Miss Granger, I have been a hero and a leader, and I would have been 1,000 times happier if I could have belonged to someone like Harry Potter. Someone made of sterner stuff than I, to make the hard decisions, and yet worthy to lead me. I thought once that I knew such a man, but I was mistaken. Miss Granger, you have no idea at all how fortunate are those like you, compared to heroes.
The hot, burning feeling was creeping up her throat again, along with helplessness. She didn't understand why Professor McGonagall had brought her here if the headmaster wasn't going to help. And from a glance at Professor McGonagall's face, it looked like Professor McGonagall also wasn't sure now that it had been a good idea.
"I don't want to be a hero,"
said Hermione Granger.
"I don't want to be a hero's companion. I just want to be me."
The thought came to her a few seconds later that maybe she did, in fact, want to be a hero, but she decided not to change what she'd said.
"Ah," said the old wizard, "that is a tall order, Miss Granger."
Dumbledore rose from his throne, stepped out beside his desk, and pointed to a symbol on the wall, so ubiquitous that Hermione's eyes had glossed right over it. A faded shield on which was inscribed the Heraldry of Hogwarts, the Lion and Snake and Badger and Raven, and in Latin engraved words whose point she'd never understood. Then, as she realized where that shield was and how old it looked, it suddenly occurred to Hermione that this might be the original.
"A Hufflepuff would say,"
said Dumbledore, tapping his finger on the faded badger and making Hermione wince for the sacrilege, if it was the original,
that people fail to become who they're meant to be, because they're too lazy to put in all the work involved. A Ravenclaw," tapping the raven, "would repeat those words that the wise know to be far older than Socrates. Know thyself, and say that people fail to become who they are meant to be through ignorance and lack of thought. And Salazar Slytherin," Dumbledore frowned as his finger tapped the faded snake, "why, he said that we become who we are meant to be by following our desires wherever they lead. Perhaps he would say that people fail to become themselves because they refuse to do what is necessary to achieve their ambitions. But then one notes that nearly all of the dark wizards to come out of Hogwarts have been Slytherins. Did they become what they were meant to be? I think not."
Dumbledore's finger tapped the lion, and then he turned toward her.
"Tell me, Miss Granger, what would a Gryffindor say? I do not need to ask whether the Sorting Hat offered you that house."
It didn't seem like a hard question.
"A Gryffindor would say that people don't become who they should be because they're afraid."
"Most people are afraid, Miss Granger," said the old wizard. "They live their whole lives circumscribed by crippling fear that cuts off everything they might accomplish, everything they might become. Fear of saying or doing the wrong thing. Fear of losing their mere possessions. Fear of death. And above all, the fear of what other people will think of them. Such fear is a most terrible thing, Miss Granger, and it is terribly important to know that. But it is not what Godric Gryffindor would have said. a people become who they are meant to be, Miss Granger, by doing what is right. By doing what is right.
The old wizard's voice was gentle.
So, tell me, Miss Granger, what seems to you like the right choice? For that is who you truly are, and wherever that path leads, that is who you are meant to become.
There was a long space filled with the sounds of things that could not be counted. She thought about it, because she was a Ravenclaw.
I don't think it's right,
Hermione said slowly.
For someone to have to live inside someone else's shadow like that.
Many things in the world are not right, said the old wizard. The question is, what is right for you to do about them? Hermione Granger, I shall be less subtle than is usual for a mysterious old wizard, and tell you outright that you cannot imagine how badly things could go if the events surrounding Harry Potter turn to ill. His quest is a matter you would not even dream of walking away from if you knew.
What quest?
Said Hermione. Her voice was trembling, because it was very clear what answer the headmaster was looking for, and she didn't want to give it.
What happened to Harry back then? Why was Fawkes on his shoulder?
He grew up, said the wizard.
His eyes blinked several times beneath the half-moon glasses, and his face suddenly looked very lined.
You see, Miss Granger, people do not grow up because of time. People grow up when they are placed in grown-up situations. That is what happened to Harry Potter that Saturday. He was told, you are not to share this information with anyone, you understand. He was told that he would have to fight someone. I cannot tell you who. I cannot tell you why. But that is what happened to him, and why he needs his friends.
There was a pause.
Bellatrix Black?
Hermione said. She couldn't have been more shocked if someone had plugged an electrical cord into her ear.
You're going to make Harry fight Bellatrix Black?
No, said the old wizard. Not her. I cannot tell you who or why.
She thought about it some more.
Is there any way I can keep up with Harry?
Said Hermione.
I mean, I'm not saying it's what I'll do, but if he needs friends, then can we be equal friends? Can I be a hero too?
Ah,
said the old wizard and smiled.
Only you can decide that, Miss Granger.
But you're not going to help me, like you're helping Harry.
The old wizard shook his head.
I have helped him little enough, Miss Granger. And if you're asking me for a quest...
The old wizard smiled again, rather wryly.
Miss Granger, you are in your first year of Hogwarts. Do not be too eager to grow up. There will be time enough for that later.
I'm 12. Harry's 11.
Harry Potter is special, said the old wizard. As you know, Miss Granger.
The blue eyes were suddenly piercing beneath the half-moon glasses, and she was reminded of the day of the Dementor when Dumbledore's voice had said inside her mind that he knew about Harry's dark side. Hermione put up her hand and touched Professor McGonagall's hand, which had stayed strong on her shoulder this whole time, and Hermione said, she was surprised that her voice didn't break,
"I'd like to go now, please."
"Of course,"
said Professor McGonagall, and Hermione felt the hand on her shoulder gently turning her around to face the oaken door.
"Have you chosen your path yet, Hermione Granger?"
said Albus Dumbledore's voice from behind her, even as the door slowly creaked open to reveal the enchantment of the endless stair. She nodded.
"And?"
"Oh,"
she said, her voice stuck.
I'll..."
She swallowed.
"I'll do what's right."
She didn't say anything else. She couldn't. And then the endless stair began revolving around her once again. Neither she nor Professor McGonagall spoke on the way down. When the flowing stone gargoyles stepped out of their way and the two of them stepped out into the corridors of Hogwarts, Professor McGonagall finally spoke, and she said in a whisper,
"I'm so sorry, Miss Granger. I didn't think the headmaster would say such things to you. I think he's truly forgotten what it's like to be a child."
Hermione glanced back up to her and saw that Professor McGonagall looked like she was about to burst into tears. Only, not really, but there was a tightness in her face that was like that.
"If I want to be a hero too,"
said Hermione,
"if I decided to be a hero too, is there anything you can do to help?"
Professor McGonagall rapidly shook her head and said,
"Miss Granger, I'm not sure the headmaster's wrong about that. You are 12.
"Okay,"
said Hermione, then walked forward a bit.
"Excuse me,"
said Hermione.
"Is it okay if I walk back to the Ravenclaw Tower by myself? I'm sorry, it's not your fault or anything. I just want to be by myself right now."
"Of course, Miss Granger,"
said Professor McGonagall, her voice sounding a little hoarse, and Hermione heard her footsteps stop and then turn around behind her. Hermione Granger walked away. She climbed a flight of stairs, and then another, wondering if there was anyone else in Hogwarts who would give her a chance to be a hero. Professor Flitwick would say the same thing as Professor McGonagall, and even if he didn't, he probably couldn't help. Hermione didn't know who could help. Well, Professor Quirrell would come up with something clever if she used up enough Quirrell points, but she had a feeling that asking him would be a bad idea. That the defense professor couldn't help anyone become the sort of hero that was worth becoming, and that he wouldn't even understand the difference. She had almost gotten to the Ravenclaw Tower when she saw the flash of gold. Chapter 69 Self-Actualization, Part 4. It was out of the corner of her eye that Hermione Granger saw it, a reflection on the polished metal of a statue at the junction of two corridors. A flash of gold, a flash of red, something like an image of fire. Just for a moment, she saw it, and then it was gone. She paused, puzzled, and she almost walked away. But there had been something familiar about that brief glow. Hermione walked forward to where the statue had stood, looked at the corridor from which she thought the fiery reflection might have come. Faintly, as though from a faraway place, she heard the cry, the call. Hermione started to run. She ran for a while. Whenever she got to a junction, she would pause, catch as much breath as she could, and then she would see a flash of fire reflected from one direction or another, or hear that distant call. If it hadn't been for her army training, she would have fallen over in exhaustion running like that. She never saw the phoenix. And then she came to a four-way branch, and there was nothing. No sign. She waited for long seconds, and she heard no cry and saw no fire. And she was only just starting to wonder, with a sick, sad feeling, if she'd imagined the whole thing, when she heard a person cry out. When her rapidly racing feet turned the corner, her mind took in the whole scene at a glance. Three huge boys in green-trimmed robes already turning to look at her, and one shorter and smaller boy in yellow, who was dangling in the air from one foot held up high by an invisible hand. The Sunshine General didn't even think about it. People who stopped to think didn't spring very good ambushes. Her wand was in her hand. Her fingers did the twist, and her lips said,
"Somnium!"
And the largest bully fell over. The Hufflepuff boy dropped out of the air with a thump, and the other two bullies were trying to aim their wands at her, and she said,
"Somnium!"
again. And another huge boy keeled over. The one who'd been aiming his wand faster, that was who she'd fired at. Unfortunately, casting two sleep hexes in a row like that was hard, even for her, and she couldn't get off a third before the last bully shouted, "Protego!" and was surrounded by a shimmering blue glow. 24 hours ago, Hermione would have panicked at that. A real shielding charm would let the bully boy cast spells on her even while he was protected. Now she...
"Stupefy!" shouted the bully boy.
The crimson bolt blasted toward her with a terrible brilliance, blazing far brighter than any hex that had sprung from Harry's wand. Hermione swayed slightly to the left, and the bolt missed, because the bully's aim hadn't been nearly as good as Harry's, and the thought came to her that maybe bullies and Professor Quirrell's armies didn't mix.
"Stupefy!"
shouted the bully boy again.
"Expelliarmus! Stupefy!"
Anyway, now she'd just spent a whole hour thinking of all the other spells she could have cast on Harry and Neville.
"Jellify!"
yelled the bully boy, a wide-beam jinx with no visible bolt to dodge, and her knees suddenly felt almost too weak to support her. And then, with an angry roar producing an even brighter blaze of crimson,
"Stupefy!"
She dodged that one by deliberately falling, and by then she'd recovered enough for her next spell, which was...
"Glissio!"
said Hermione, directing her remark to the floor.
"Ugh!"
said the bully boy, and his feet went out from under him, and he actually dropped his wand. The Protego winked out.
"Somnium!"
said Hermione. She was still breathing in gasps as she crawled over to where the Hufflepuff boy was sitting up and groaning and rubbing his skull where he'd been dropped head first into the floor. It was a good thing he hadn't been a muggle, Hermione realized, or he might have snapped his neck. She hadn't actually thought of that.
"Huh?"
said the boy. His hair was of a colour that would have been called brunette if he was a girl, his eyes an undistinguished brown that somehow seemed just right for Hufflepuff. There weren't any tears on his face, but he looked sort of pale. She pegged him at about fourth year, or third. Then the brown eyes widened as he focused on her.
"General Sunshine?"
"Yeah,"
she said.
"That's me."
If the Hufflepuff boy said anything about her being Harry Potter's love interest, she decided, he was going to die.
"Wow," said the Hufflepuff boy. "That was... you just... I mean, I saw you on the screens before Christmas, but... wow! We can't believe you just did that."
There was a pause.
"I can't believe I just did that,"
thought Hermione Granger, who was feeling a little faint all of a sudden. It must have been all that running.
"Excuse me," she said. "Can you angelify my legs?"
The boy nodded, pushed himself to his feet, and reached inside his robes for his wand. But Hermione had to correct his gesture before the counterjinx worked right.
"I'm Michael Hopkins," said the boy, once Hermione had rolled back to her own feet.
He stuck out his hand.
"Or just Mike, inside Hufflepuff. There aren't any other Mikes in all of Hufflepuff this year. Would you believe it?"
They shook hands, and Mike said,
"Anyway, thank you."
Hermione wasn't prepared for the rush of euphoria that hit her then. Saving someone like that literally felt better than anything she'd ever felt in her whole life. She turned to look at the bullies. They were very big, and they looked, she thought, around 15 years old. And she was suddenly realizing just how large a difference had sprung up between Hogwarts students who'd signed up for all of Professor Quirrell's extracurricular activities and students who'd had years of being taught by the worst professors ever to go professing. Being able to hit things that you aimed at, for example, or being able to think well enough in the middle of a fight to realize that you ought to innovate your fallen allies. And other things Professor Quirrell had said, like that in the real world, almost any fight would be settled by a surprise attack, suddenly made a lot more sense to her. Still trying to catch her breath, she looked back at Mike.
"Would you believe," said Hermione Granger, "that 5 minutes ago I was having trouble figuring out how to become a hero?"
Had she really thought she needed permission from someone, or that heroes sat around waiting for someone else to give them quests? It was very simple, actually. You just went where evil was. That was all it ever took to be a hero. She should have remembered. She shouldn't have needed a phoenix to tell her that bad things sometimes happened right here in Hogwarts. Then Hermione glanced nervously back at where the three older boys were lying unconscious as the realization hit that they had seen her. They might know who she was. They might sneak up on her and take her by surprise and... and they could really hurt her. Hermione stopped. She remembered that Harry Potter had put himself in the middle of 5 Slytherin bullies on the first day of class when he hadn't even known how to use his wand. She remembered the headmaster saying that you grew up by being put in grown-up situations, and that most people lived their lives inside a constraining circle of fear. And she remembered Professor McGonagall's voice saying,
"You are 12.
Hermione took a deep breath. Once, twice, and 3 times. She asked Mike if he needed to go to Madame Pomfrey's office, which he didn't, and got him to tell her the names of the Slytherin boys, just in case. And then Hermione Granger strolled away from the heap of unconscious bullies, making sure to put a smile on her face as she walked. She knew that she was probably going to get hurt sooner or later. But if you were too scared of getting hurt to do what was right, then you couldn't be a hero. It was as simple as that. And if you'd put the sorting hat on her head at that moment, it wouldn't have waited even 1 second before calling out,
Gryffindor!
She was still thinking about it when she came down to dinner. The euphoria of saving someone still hadn't worn off, and she was beginning to worry that it had broken something in her brain. As she approached the Ravenclaw table, a sudden epidemic of whispers broke out, and Hermione wondered if the Hufflepuff boy had said anything yet, before she realized that the whispers probably weren't about that. She sat down across from Harry Potter, who looked extremely nervous, probably because she was still smiling.
"Ah,"
said Harry as she served herself freshly toasted bread, butter, cinnamon, no fruits or vegetables whatsoever, and 3 helpings of chocolate brownies.
"Ah."
She let him go on like that until she'd finished pouring herself a glass of grapefruit juice, and then she said,
"I've got a question for you, Mr. Potter. How do you think people fail to become themselves?"
"Oh, what?" said Harry.
She looked at him.
"Pretend there isn't all this stuff going on," she said. "And just say whatever you'd have said yesterday."
Said Harry, looking very confused and worried.
I think we already are ourselves. It's not like I'm an imperfect copy of someone else, but I guess if I try to run with the sense of the question, then I'd say that people don't become themselves because we absorb all this crazy stuff from the environment and then regurgitate it. I mean, how many people playing Quidditch would be playing a game like that if they'd invented the game themselves? Or, back in Muggle Britain, how many people who think of themselves as Labour or Conservative or Liberal Democrat would invent that exact bundle of political beliefs if they had to come up with everything themselves?
Hermione considered this. She'd been wondering if Harry would say something Slytherin, or maybe even Gryffindor. But this didn't seem to fit into the headmaster's list. And it occurred to Hermione that there might be a lot more viewpoints on the subject than just 4.
"Okay,"
said Hermione.
"Different question. What makes someone a hero?"
"A hero?" said Harry.
"Yeah,"
said Hermione.
"Ah,"
said Harry. His fork and knife nervously sawed at a piece of steak, cutting it into tinier and tinier pieces.
I think a lot of people can do things when the world channels them into it. Like, people are expecting you to do it, or it only uses skills you already know, or there's an authority watching to catch your mistakes and make sure you do your part. But problems like that are probably already being solved, you know? And then there's no need for heroes. So, I think the people we call heroes are rare, because they've got to make everything up as they go along. And most people aren't comfortable with that. Why do you ask?"
Harry's fork stabbed 3 pieces of thoroughly shredded steak and lifted them up to his mouth.
"Oh, I stunned 3 older Slytherin bullies and rescued a Hufflepuff,"
said Hermione.
"I'm going to be a hero."
When Harry had finished choking on his food, some of the other Ravenclaws in hearing distance were still coughing, he said,
"What?"
Hermione told the story. It began rippling out in further whispers as she spoke, though she left out the part about the phoenix, because that seemed like a private thing between the two of them. Hermione had felt surprised, thinking about it afterward, that a phoenix would appear for someone who wanted to be a hero. It seemed a bit selfish when she thought about it that way. But maybe it didn't matter to phoenixes, so long as they saw that you were willing to help people." When she was done talking, Harry stared at her across the table and didn't say a word.
"I'm sorry for how I acted earlier,"
Hermione said. She sipped from her glass of grapefruit juice.
"I should have remembered that if I'm still beating the pants off you in charms class, then it's okay for you to do better in defence."
"Please, don't take this the wrong way," said Harry. He looked too adult now, and grim. "But are you sure this is who you are? And, not to put it bluntly, me?"
"I'm quite certain," said Hermione. "Why, my name practically spells out heroine, except for the extra M. I've never noticed that until today."
"Being a hero isn't all fun and games," said Harry. "Not real heroing, the sort grown-ups have to do. It isn't like this. It isn't going to be this easy."
"I know," said Hermione.
"It's hard, and it's painful, and you've got to make decisions where there isn't any good answer."
"Yes, Harry, I read those books too."
"No," said Harry. "You don't understand. Even if the books warn you, there's no way you can understand until..."
"That doesn't stop you,"
said Hermione.
"It doesn't stop you even a little. I bet you never even considered not being a hero because of that. So why do you think it'll stop me?"
There was a pause. A sudden, huge smile lit Harry's face, a smile that was as bright and as boyish as the frown had been grim and adult, and everything was all right again between them.
"This is going to go horribly, mind-bogglingly wrong somehow,"
said Harry, still smiling hugely.
"You know that, right?"
"Oh, I know,"
said Hermione. She ate another bite of toast.
"That reminds me, Dumbledore refused to be my mysterious old wizard. Is there some place I can write to get another one?"
Aftermath.
"In Professor Flitwick says her determination seems unshakable,"
Minerva said tightly, staring at the silver-bearded old wizard who was responsible for this. Albus Dumbledore was just sitting silently and listening to her with a distant, sad look in his eyes.
"Miss Granger didn't even blink when Professor Flitwick threatened to have her transferred to Gryffindor. Just said that if she left, she would take all the books with her. Hermione Granger has decided she's going to be a hero, and she's not taking no for an answer. I doubt you could have pushed her into this any harder if you tried to."
It took all of 5 full seconds for Minerva's brain to process the realization.
"Albus!"
she shrieked.
"My dear," said the old wizard, "after you have dealt with your 13th hero or so, you will realize that they react quite predictably to certain things, such as being told that they are too young, or that they are not destined to be heroes, or that being a hero is unpleasant. And if you truly wish to be sure, you should tell them all 3. Although,"
with a brief sigh,
"it does not do to be too blatant, or your deputy headmistress might catch you."
"Albus,"
Minerva said, her voice even tighter.
If she is hurt, I swear this time I'll...
She would have come to that place in due time,
Albus said, the distant sad look still in his eyes.
If someone is meant to become a hero, then they will not listen to our warnings, Minerva, no matter how hard we try. And given that, it is better for Harry if Miss Granger does not fall too far behind him.
Albus produced, as though from nowhere, a tin which flipped open to reveal small yellow lumps. She'd never been able to figure out where he kept it, and she'd never been able to detect the magic involved.
Lemon drop?
She is a 12-year-old girl, Albus!
After aftermath.
With the windows barely visible in the evening gloom, fishes swam in the black waters, illuminated by the bright shine of the Slytherin common room as they came closer, fading into darkness as they swam away. Daphne Greengrass was sitting in a comfortable black leather couch, her head collapsed into her hands, glowing golden yellowish as bright sparks of white light winked into and out of existence around her. She'd been ready to be teased about liking Neville Longbottom. She'd been expecting to hear a lot of snide remarks about Hufflepuffs. She'd thought of whole reams of snappy comebacks for it while she was on the way back to the Slytherin dungeons. She had been looking forward to being teased about liking Neville. Being teased about that sort of thing meant you'd grown up into a real girl. As it turned out, nobody had worked out that her challenging Neville to a most ancient duel meant that she liked him. She had thought it would be obvious. But no, nobody else had even thought of that, apparently. It was always the hex you didn't see that hit you. She should have just called herself Daphne of Sunshine, like Neville of Chaos. Or Sunny Daphne, like Sunny Ron. Or anything except Greengrass of Sunshine. Greengrass of Sunshine! It had gone from there to Greengrass of Sunshine and Blue Skies. Then someone had added snow-topped mountains and frolicking woodland creatures. Currently, she was being referred to as the sparkly unicorn princess of the noble and most ancient house of Sparklypoo. And some cursed sixth-year girl had hit her with a sparkling jinx. She hadn't even known there was such a thing as a sparkling jinx, and finite incantatum hadn't worked. And she'd asked older girls who she'd thought were her friends. She had apparently been wrong about this. And then she'd threatened the caster with grievous political mayhem wrecked by her father, and nonetheless, Daphne Greengrass was still sitting in the Slytherin common room with her head in her hands, sparkling brightly, and wondering how she'd ended up as the only sane person in Hogwarts. It was after dinner time, and they were still at it. And if they didn't stop by tomorrow morning, she was going to transfer to Durmstrang and become the next Dark Lady.
"Hey, everyone!"
the Caro twins said dramatically, waving an issue of the Daily Prophet.
"Did you hear the news? The Wizengamot just ruled that, let's see what you got, constitutes a lawful challenge to be fought until the challenger lies down and has a nap.
How dare you insult the honour of the sparkly unicorn princess?"
shouted Tracy.
"Let's see what you got."
Then Tracy lay down flat on her sofa and started snoring loudly. Daphne's sparkling head sank further into her glowing hands.
"After my family takes over, I'm going to have you all put under anti-apparition jinxes and flued into the sea,"
she said to no one in particular.
You're all okay with that, right?
Thunk, thunk. Thunk, 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 thunk.
Daphne looked up, surprised. That was a sunshine code signal.
I heard someone knocking,
bellowed Mr. Goyle.
Knocking of the door.
Let's see what you've got, door,
shouted an older boy near the door and yanked the door open. There was a moment of complete surprise.
I've come to have a word with Miss Greengrass,
said the Sunshine General, sounding like she was trying to sound confident.
Could someone please...
From the look on Hermione's face, she had just noticed Daphne sparkling. And that was when Millicent Bulstrode raced up from the lower dorms and shouted,
Hey, everyone, guess what? Now Granger went and beat up Derek and what's left of his crew, and his father owled him and said that if he didn't...
Millicent caught sight of Hermione standing in the doorway. There was a very loud silence. Said Daphne. What? Said her brain.
What are you doing here, General?
Well,
said Hermione Granger with a strange smile on her face,
I've decided it's not fair if mysterious old wizards give some people a chance to be heroes and not others. And also, I've read history books, and there aren't nearly enough girl heroes in them, so I thought I'd just drop by and see if you wanted to be a hero, and why are you glowing like that?
There was another silence.
This, said Daphne, was probably not the best time to ask me that question.
I'll take it,
shouted Tracy Davis, leaping off her sofa. And thus was born the Society for the Promotion of Heroic Equality for Witches. Chapter 70. Self-Actualization, Part 5. Even if you had been the deputy headmistress for 3 decades, and a transfiguration professor before that, it was rare that you saw Albus Dumbledore caught completely flat-footed.
Susan Bounce, Lavender Brown, and Daphne Greengrass,
Minerva finished.
I should also note, Albus, that Miss Grange's account of your seemingly unsupportive attitude, I believe her phrase was, he said I should be happy to be just a sidekick, has generated a good deal of interest among the older girls, several of whom came to me to ask if Miss Granger's accusations were true, since Miss Granger had said that I was there.
The old wizard leaned back in his huge chair, still gazing at her, his eyes looking rather abstracted beneath the half-moon glasses.
It placed me in something of a dilemma, Albus,
said Professor McGonagall. Her face stayed quite neutral, she made sure of that.
I knew that you did not truly mean to discourage the girl. Quite the opposite, in fact. But you and Severus have often told me that, to keep a secret, I must give no sign that differs from the reaction of someone truly ignorant. Thus, I had no choice but to confirm that Miss Granger's account was accurate, and feign the appropriate degree of worry, with the slight overtone of offence. After all, had I not known you were deliberately manipulating Miss Granger, I might have been rather put out.
I see,
the old wizard said slowly. His hands toyed absently with his silver beard, small, quick gestures.
Thankfully,
Professor McGonagall continued,
so far, Professor Sinestra and Vector are the only two faculty members to don Miss Granger's buttons.
Buttons?
Repeated the old wizard. Minerva drew forth a small silver disc bearing the initials S-P-H-E-W, laid it on Albus's desk, and gave it a brief tap with her finger, and the voices of Hermione Granger, Padma Patil, Parvati Patil, Lavender Brown, Susan Bones, Hannah Abbott, Daphne Greengrass, and Tracy Davis cried out in unison,
"We will settle for second best. It's time to give our witch a quest."
Miss Granger is selling them for 2 sickles, and tells me that she has so far sold 50 of them. I believe that Nymphadora Tonks, in 7th-year Hufflepuff, is enchanting them for her. To conclude my report,
Professor McGonagall said briskly,
our 8 newly minted heroines have asked permission to conduct a protest outside the entrance to your office.
I hope, Albus said, frowning, you explained to them that...
I explained to them that Wednesday at 7 p.m. would be fine, said Minerva.
She took back the button from the headmaster's desk, favoured Albus with a honeyed smile, and turned to the door.
Minerva, said the old wizard from behind her. Minerva!
The oaken door shut solidly behind her. There wasn't a lot of room between the brief stone walls that demarcated the vestibule to the headmaster's office, so although a lot of people had wanted to watch the protest, not many had been allowed to come. Just Professor Sinestra and Professor Vector, who were wearing the buttons, and the prefects Penelope Clearwater and Rose Brown and Jacqueline Priest, who were wearing the buttons. Behind them, Professor McGonagall and Professor Sprout and Professor Flitwick, who weren't wearing the buttons, scrutinized the whole affair. Harry Potter and the head boy of Hogwarts were there, and the boy prefects Percy Weasley and Oliver Beetson, all wearing the buttons to show solidarity. And, of course, the 8 founding members of SPEW, forming a picket line next to the gargoyles with their signs. Hermione's own sign, attached to a solid wooden handle, which seemed to weigh heavier and heavier in her hands as the seconds passed, said, "Nobody's sidekick!" And Professor Quirrell, who was leaning with his back against the far stone wall and watching with unreadable eyes. The defense professor had gotten one of her buttons, though she'd never sold one to him, and he wasn't wearing it, but idly tossing it with one hand. This whole idea had seemed like a much better idea 4 days ago, when the fires of her indignation had been burning fresh and hot, and she'd been facing the prospect of doing it all 4 days later, instead of right now. But she had to carry on, because that's what heroes did. They carried on, and also because it seemed infinitely too awful to tell everyone she was calling it off. Hermione wondered how much heroism had gone on for reasons like that. Most books didn't say, "And then they refused to give up, no matter how sensible it would have been, because that would have been too embarrassing." But a great deal of history made a lot more sense that way. At 7:15 p.m., Professor McGonagall had told her, Headmaster Dumbledore would come down and talk to them for a couple of minutes. Professor McGonagall had said, not to be frightened, the headmaster was a good person, deep down, and they'd properly gotten the school's authorization for the protest. But Hermione was very, very aware that even if she was doing it with signed permission, she was still defying authority. After she'd decided to be a hero, Hermione had done the obvious thing and gone to the Hogwarts library and taken out books on how to be a hero. Then she had returned those books back to their shelves because it had been patently obvious that none of the authors had been actual heroes themselves. Instead, she'd just read, 5 times over, until she'd memorized every word, The 30 Inches by Godric Gryffindor that was all his autobiography and his life's advice. Or the English translation, anyway. She couldn't read Latin yet. Godric Gryffindor's autobiography had been a lot more compressed than the books Hermione was used to reading. He used one sentence to say things that should have taken 30 inches just by themselves, and then there was another sentence after that. But it was clear from what she'd read that while defying authority wasn't the point of being a hero, you couldn't be a hero if you were too scared to do it. And Hermione Granger knew by now how others saw her, and she knew what other people thought she couldn't do. Hermione hefted her picket sign a little higher and concentrated on breathing slowly and rhythmically, instead of hyperventilating until she fell over.
"Really?"
said Miss Preece in a tone of undisguised fascination.
"They couldn't vote."
"Indeed," said Professor Sinestra. The astronomy professor's hair was still dark, and her dark face only slightly lined. Hermione would have guessed her age at around 70, except...
"I quite remember my mother's rejoicing when they announced the Qualification of Women Act, although she did not actually qualify."
Which meant that Professor Sinestra had been around her Muggle family in 1918.
"And that wasn't the worst of it. Why, just a few centuries earlier..."
30 seconds later, all the non-Muggleborns, male and female both, were staring at Professor Sinestra with utterly shocked expressions. Hannah had dropped her sign.
"And that wasn't the worst of it either. Not by half," finished Professor Sinestra. "But you see where this sort of thing could potentially lead."
"Merlin, preserve us," said Penelope Clearwater in a strangled voice. "You mean that's how men would treat us if we didn't have wands to defend ourselves?"
"Hey," said one of the boy prefects, "that's not..." There was a short, sardonic laugh from the direction of Professor Quirrell. When Hermione turned her head to look, she saw that the defense professor was still idly toying with the button, not bothering to glance up at the rest of them as he said,
"Such is human nature, Miss Clearwater. Rest assured that you would be no kinder if witches had wands and men lacked them."
"I hardly think so," snapped Professor Sinestra.
A cold chuckle.
"I suspect it happens more often than any dare suggest in the proudest pure-blood families. Some lonely witch spies a handsome muggle and thinks how very easy it would be to slip the man a love potion and by him be adored alone and utterly. And since she knows he can offer her no resistance, why, it is only natural for her to take from him whatever she pleases."
"Professor Quirrell!"
said Professor McGonagall sharply.
I'm sorry,
Professor Quirrell said mildly, his eyes still looking down on the button in his hand.
Are we still pretending it doesn't happen? My apologies, then.
Professor Sinestra snapped.
And I suppose that wizards don't... There are children present, professors.
Again, Professor McGonagall.
Some do,
Professor Quirrell said equably, as though discussing the weather.
Although, personally, I don't.
There was a bit of silence for a time. Hermione put up her sign again, but it slipped down to her shoulder while she was listening. She'd never thought of that, not even a little, and now she was trying not to think of it, and her stomach was feeling a bit queasy. She looked in Harry Potter's direction, not quite knowing why she did, and she saw that Harry's face was perfectly still. A chill ran down her spine before she looked away, not quite fast enough to miss the small nod that Harry gave her, as though they were agreeing on something.
"To be fair,"
Professor Sinestra said after a while,
"since I received my Hogwarts letter, I can't recall encountering any prejudice on account of being a woman, or coloured.
No.
Now it is all for being a muggle-born. I believe Miss Granger said that it was just with heroes that she found a problem so far."
It took Hermione a moment to realize that she'd been asked the question, and then she said,
"Yes?"
in a tone that squeaked a little. This whole thing had blown up a bit larger than she'd imagined when she'd started it.
"What exactly did you check, Miss Granger?"
said Professor Vector. She looked older than Professor Sinestra, her hair starting to grey a little. Hermione hadn't ever come close to Professor Vector in person until the arithmancy professor had asked her for a button. Hermione said, her voice a little high.
"I checked the history books, and there's been as many women ministers of magic as men. Then I looked at Supreme Mugwumps, and there are a few more wizards than witches, but not many. But if you look at people like famous dark wizard hunters, or people who've stopped invasions of dark creatures, or people who've overthrown dark lords..."
"And the dark wizards themselves, of course," said Professor Quirrell. Now the defense professor had looked up. "You may add that to your list, Miss Granger. Among all the suspected Death Eaters, we know of only two sorceresses, Bellatrix Black and Electo Caro. And I dare say that most wizards would be hard-pressed to name a single dark lady besides Baba Yaga."
Hermione just stared at him. He couldn't possibly be...
"Professor Quirrell," said Professor Vector, "what exactly are you implying?"
The defense professor raised the button so that the golden-lettered spew faced them and said,
"Heroes,"
then turned the button to show its silver backside and said,
"Dark wizards. They are similar career paths, followed by similar people, and one can hardly ask why young witches are turning away from one course without considering its reflection."
"Oh, now I see," "You're joining our protest because you're worried that not enough girls are becoming dark witches."
Then Tracy giggled, which Hermione couldn't have managed at this point if you paid her £1 million sterling. There was a half-smile on Professor Quirrell's face as he replied,
Not really, Miss Davis. In truth, I do not care about that sort of thing in the slightest. But it is futile to count the witches among ministers of magic and other such ordinary folk leading ordinary existences, when Grindelwald and Dumbledore and he who must not be named were all men.
The defense professor's fingers idly spun the button, turning it over and over.
Then again, only a very few folk ever do anything interesting with their lives. What does it matter to you if they are mostly witches or mostly wizards, so long as you are not among them? And I suspect you will not be among them, Miss Davis, for although you are ambitious, you have no ambition.
That's not true, said Tracy indignantly. And what's it mean?
Professor Quirrell straightened from where he had been leaning against the wall.
You were sorted into Slytherin, Miss Davies, and I expect that you will grasp at any opportunity for advancement which falls into your hands. But there is no great ambition that you are driven to accomplish, and you will not make your opportunities. At best, you will grasp your way upward into Minister of Magic, or some other high position of unimportance, never breaking the bonds of your existence.
Then Professor Quirrell's gaze shifted away from Tracy. He was looking at her, the pale blue eyes staring at her with an awful intensity.
Tell me, Miss Granger, do you have an ambition?
Professor!
Squeaked the high, stern voice of Professor Flitwick, and then her head of house's voice cut off, and from the side of her vision Hermione saw that Harry had laid his hand on Professor Flitwick's shoulder and was shaking his head, face looking very adult. Hermione felt like a deer caught in headlights.
What drove you to break your bounds, Miss Granger?
Said the defense professor, still gazing directly at her.
Why is getting good marks in class no longer enough? Is it true greatness that you seek? Does some aspect of the world dissatisfy you that you must remake according to your will? Or is this all merely a child's game to you? I will be quite disappointed if this is only about rivaling Harry Potter.
I...
said Hermione, her voice so high-pitched it made a sort of peeping sound, but then she couldn't think of what else to say.
You may take a moment to think, if you like, said Professor Quirrell. Pretend it is a homework essay, 6 inches due Thursday. I hear you are quite eloquent in them.
Everyone was looking at her.
I...
said Hermione.
I don't agree with one single thing you just said anywhere.
Well spoken,
came Professor McGonagall's crisp voice. Professor Quirrell's gaze did not waver.
That is not 6 inches, Miss Granger. Something drives you to defy the headmaster's verdict and gather followers about yourself. Perhaps it is something you prefer not to speak aloud.
Hermione knew the correct answer wouldn't impress Professor Quirrell, but it was the correct answer. So, she said it.
I don't think you need ambition to be a hero,
Hermione said,
Her voice wavered, but it didn't crack.
And I think you just have to do what's right. And they're not my followers. We're friends.
Professor Quirrell leaned back against the wall again. The half-smile had faded from his face.
Most folk tell themselves they are doing right, Miss Granger. They do not thereby rise above the ordinary.
Hermione took a couple of deep breaths, trying to be brave.
It's not about being not ordinary,
she said as stoutly as she could.
But I think if someone just tries to do what's right over and over again, and they're not too lazy to do all the work it takes, and they think about what they're doing, and they're brave enough to do it even when they're scared.
Hermione paused for an instant, her eyes darting to Tracy and Daphne.
And they cleverly plan how to do it, and they don't just do what other people do. Then I think someone like that would already get into enough trouble.
Some of the girls and boys chuckled, as did Professor McGonagall, who looked wry and proud at the same time.
You may be right about that, said the defense professor, his eyes half-lidded.
He tossed Hermione the button, and she caught it without thinking.
My donation to your cause, Miss Granger. I understand that they are worth 2 sickles.
The defense professor turned and walked away without another word.
I thought I was going to faint,
gasped Hannah after his footsteps had faded, and she heard some of the other girls letting out their breath or putting down their signs for a moment.
I do too have an ambition,
said Tracy, who seemed to be almost on the verge of tears.
I'll figure out what it is by tomorrow. But I have one, I'm sure.
If you really can't think of anything, Daphne said, giving Tracy a comforting pat on the shoulder, just go with the oldie but goodie and try to take over the world.
Hey,
said Susan sharply,
you're supposed to be heroes now. That means you have to be good.
No, it's all right, said Lavender. I'm pretty sure General Chaos wants to take over the world, and he's sort of a good guy.
More conversation was going on behind the picket line.
My goodness, said Penelope Clearwater. I think that's the most overtly evil defense professor we've ever had.
Professor McGonagall coughed warningly, and the head boy said,
You weren't around for Professor Barney,
which made several people twitch.
Professor Quirrell just talks like that,
said Harry Potter, though he sounded less certain than before.
I mean, think about it. He doesn't do anything like what Professor Snape does.
Mr. Potter,
squeaked Professor Flitwick, voice polite and face stern.
Why did you ask me to stay silent?
Professor Quirrell was testing Hermione to see if he wanted to be her mysterious old wizard, Harry said, which totally would not have worked out in any way, shape or form, but she had to answer for herself.
Hermione blinked. Then Hermione blinked again as she realized that it was Professor Quirrell who was Harry Potter's mysterious old wizard, and not Dumbledore at all. And that really wasn't a good sign. A rumbling noise filled the small stone vestibule, and Hermione, her nerves already on edge, spun rapidly around, almost dropping her protest sign as her other hand darted toward her wand. The gargoyles were stepping aside, the flowing stone rumbling like rock as it moved like flesh. The huge, ugly figures waited only briefly, dead grey eyes staring out in silent vigil. Then the great gargoyles folded their wings back into place and stepped back into their former positions, the flowing stone not changing its outward appearance at all as it returned from flexibility to motionlessness, and the brief gap in the stone of Hogwarts was solid once more. And before them all, wearing robes of bright purple that probably only looked hideous if you were Muggle-born, stood the towering form of Albus Percival Wulfric Brian Dumbledore, the headmaster of Hogwarts, the chief warlock of the Wizengamot, the supreme mugwump of the International Confederation of Wizards, the vanquisher of the Dark Lord Grindelwald and protector of Britain, the rediscoverer of the fabled 12 uses of dragon's blood, the most powerful wizard alive. And he was looking at her, Hermione Jean Granger, general of the recently expanded Sunshine Regiment, who was getting the best grades in the first year of Hogwarts classes, and who had declared herself a heroine. Even her name was shorter than his. The headmaster smiled benevolently at her, his wrinkle-lined eyes twinkling cheerfully beneath their half-circles of glass, and said, "Hello, Miss Granger." The odd thing was that it wasn't nearly as scary as talking to Professor Quirrell.
"Hello, Headmaster Dumbledore,"
Hermione said with only a slight quiver in her voice.
"Miss Granger," said Dumbledore,
now looking more serious,
"I think you and I may have had a bit of a misunderstanding. I did not mean to imply that you could not or should not be a hero. I certainly did not mean to imply that witches in general should not be heroes. Only that you were a bit young to be thinking of such things."
Hermione, unable to help herself, glanced at Professor McGonagall and saw that Professor McGonagall was giving her an encouraging smile. Or she was giving the two of them some kind of smile, anyway. So Hermione looked back at the headmaster and said, the small quaver in her voice a little larger now,
"Since you became headmaster 40 years ago, there have been 11 students to graduate Hogwarts who became heroes. I mean, people like Lupe Cazaril and so on. And 10 of those were boys. Simarine Lindewall was the only witch."
"Hmm," said the headmaster.
There was a thoughtful expression on his face. He at least seemed to be thinking about it.
"Miss Granger, I have never been one for tallying such numbers. Often it is too much easier to count than to understand. Many good people have come out of Hogwarts, witches and wizards both. Those famed as heroes are only one kind of good person, and perhaps not the highest. You did not include Alice Longbottom or Lily Potter in your reckoning. But leave that aside. Tell me, Miss Granger, did you tally how many heroes came out of Hogwarts in the 40 years before me? For in that time I can recall only 3 now called heroes, and among those 3, no witches at all."
"I'm not trying to say it's just you,"
Hermione said.
"Only I think maybe a lot of people, like the headmasters before you two, maybe even your whole society and everything, might be discouraging girls."
The old wizard sighed. His half-glassed eyes looked only at her, as though they were the only 2 people present.
Miss Granger, it might be possible to discourage witches from becoming charms mistresses, or Quidditch players, or even aurors, but not heroes. If someone is meant to be a hero, then a hero they will be. They will walk through fire and swim through ice. Dementors will not stop them, nor the deaths of friends, and not discouragement either.
Well?
Said Hermione, and paused, struggling with the words.
Well, I mean, what if that's not actually true? I mean, to me it seems that if you want more witches to be heroes, you ought to teach them heroing.
Many boys and girls are heroes in their dreams, Dumbledore said quietly.
He did not look at any of the other girls, only at her.
Fewer in the waking world. Many have stood their ground and faced the darkness when it comes for them. Fewer come for the darkness and force it to face them. It is a hard life, sometimes lonely, often short. I have told none to refuse that calling, but neither would I wish to increase their number.
Hermione hesitated. There was something in the lined face that stopped her, like a hint to all the emotion that wasn't being displayed. Years and years of it.
Maybe if there were more heroes, their lives wouldn't be so lonely, or so short.
She couldn't bring herself to say that, though. Not to him.
But the point is, Mute, said the old wizard.
He smiled, a bit ruefully, she thought.
Miss Granger, you cannot teach heroism like you would teach charms. You cannot assign 12 inches on how to carry on when all hope seems lost. You cannot rehearse students on when to stand up and tell the headmaster he has done wrong. Heroes are born, not taught, and for whatever reason, more of them are born boys than girls.
The headmaster shrugged, as if to say that he was helpless to do anything about that. Hermione said. She couldn't help it. She glanced behind her. Professor Sinestra was looking a bit indignant, and it wasn't true that everyone was staring at her like she'd just been silly, the way she'd started to imagine while she was listening to Dumbledore. Hermione turned back to face Dumbledore again, took a deep breath and said,
"Well, maybe people who are going to be heroes will be heroes no matter what, but I don't see how anyone could really know that, aside from just saying it afterward. And when I told you that I wanted to be a hero, you weren't very encouraging."
"Mr. Potter,"
the headmaster said mildly. His eyes didn't leave hers.
"Please tell Miss Granger your impression of our own first meeting. Would you say that I was encouraging? Speak the truth."
There was a pause.
"Mr. Potter,"
said Professor Vector's voice from behind her, sounding puzzled. Harry's voice said from further back, sounding extremely reluctant.
Actually, in my case, the headmaster set fire to a chicken."
"He what?"
Hermione blurted, only there were several other people exclaiming things at around the same time, so she wasn't sure anyone heard her. Dumbledore went on gazing at her, looking perfectly serious.
I didn't know about Forks," Harry's voice said rapidly. "So he told me that Forks was a phoenix, while he was pointing to a chicken on Forks's stand, so I'd think that was Forks. And then he set the chicken on fire, and also gave me this big rock, and told me it had belonged to my father and I ought to carry it everywhere."
"But that's crazy,"
Susan blurted out. There was a sudden hush. The headmaster slowly turned his head to stare at Susan.
"I," said Susan. "I mean, I..."
The headmaster leaned down until he was face to face with the young girl.
"I didn't,"
said Susan. Dumbledore put a finger to his lips and twiddled them, making a sound. The headmaster straightened up again and said,
"Well, my good heroines, it has been pleasant speaking to you, but alas, much else remains to do this day. Still, rest assured that I am inscrutable at everyone, not just witches."
The gargoyle stepped aside, the flowing stone rumbling like rock as it moved like flesh. The huge, ugly figures waited briefly with dead grey eyes staring out in silent vigil as Albus, Percival, Wulfric, Brian, Dumbledore, smiling as benevolently as when he'd first emerged from his office, stepped back into the enchantment of the endless stare. Then the great gargoyles folded their wings back into place and stepped back into their former positions. Only one last brief echoing out before the gap closed. There was a long silence.
"He really set a chicken on fire?"
said Hannah. The eight of them had continued protesting even after that, but to be honest, their heart had gone out of it. It had been established, after some careful questions from Professor Flitwick, that Harry Potter hadn't smelled the chicken burning, which meant that it had probably been a pebble or something, transfigured into a chicken and then enclosed in a boundary charm to make sure that no smoke escaped into the air. Both Professor Flitwick and Professor McGonagall had been very emphatic about nobody trying that without their supervision. But still, what? Hermione didn't even know. But still, what? But still. After a lot of glances exchanged between girls, none of whom wanted to be the first to say it, Hermione had declared the protest over, and the adults and boys had drifted off.
"You don't think we were being unfair to Dumbledore, do you?"
said Susan as the heroines walked away to the sound of eight pairs of feet trodding on the stone paving of Hogwarts corridors.
"I mean, if he is crazy at everyone, and not just at witches, then it's not discrimination, right?
I don't want to protest against the headmaster anymore,"
Hannah said weakly. The Hufflepuff girl seemed a bit unsteady on her feet.
"I don't care what Professor McGonagall says about him not holding it against us. It's just too much for my nerves."
Lavender snorted.
"I guess you won't be slaying armies of Inferi any time soon."
"Stop that,"
Hermione said sharply.
"Look, all of us have got to learn to be heroines, right? It's okay if someone doesn't know right away. The headmaster doesn't think it can be learned,"
Padma said. The Ravenclaw girl's face was thoughtful. her steps measured as she strode through the corridor.
"The headmaster doesn't even think that's a good idea."
Daphne was striding with her back straight and her head held bolt upright, looking more like a proper young lady in her Hogwarts robes than Hermione could have done with her best formal dress.
"The headmaster,"
Daphne said in a precise voice, her shoes making hard, sharp tacking sounds on the stone,
"thinks the lot of us are a bunch of silly girls playing games, and that some day Hermione might make a good sidekick, but the rest of us are hopeless."
"Is he right?"
said Pivati. The Gryffindor girl's face was very serious, making her look much more like her twin than she usually did.
"I mean, it has to be asked."
"No!"
spat Tracy. The Slytherin girl was stalking through the hallway, looking ready to kill someone, like a miniature female Snape. Of all the girls, Tracy was the one who Hermione knew least. Hermione had talked to Lavender once before, but she'd never really seen Tracy, except at one point during a battle, until the Slytherin had jumped up from her sofa to volunteer.
"We'll show him! We'll show them all!"
"Okay," said Susan. "That was definitely evil."
"No," said Lavender. "That's a Chaos Legion motto, actually. Only she didn't do the insane laughter."
"That's right,"
Tracy said, her voice low and grim.
"This time I'm not laughing."
The girl went